That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, Amanda Waltz.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. We also have Bill Graham.
Yeah.
Back and ready for another adventure through the cinematic landscape. Today we'll be talking about Triple Nine in our feature review. Before that, we have Bill, who will be giving us a small taste of what Gods of Egypt is like.
A nibble.
Just a nibble. An amuse-bouche, if you will. I've seen a lot of stuff on the social media, on the Insta-Google tweet face? All over the Insta-Google tweet face about Gods
down.
Of Egypt. So I'm
totally
kind of excited to hear what this is like. So, before we get into that usual stuff that we want to talk about, first of all, you can follow us on Twitter, and that is at @FilmStageShow. You can also find all of these shows and be able to comment on them on thefilmstage.com. And beyond that, you can also, of course, find us on iTunes. Give us a comment. Give us a rating. We are super into getting comments and ratings on iTunes. You can also email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com. Amanda, you gonna live?
I'm gonna apologize in advance. I'm getting over a chest cold, so please ignore my muffled coughs throughout this.
Yeah, don't feel bad for her. Just
They're not cries for help.
Yeah, not feel bad for me. This is all my fault. I brought it on myself.
You must have. I don't know what's wrong with you. But speaking of emails, we got a great email from, I am going to butcher this last name. The first name is Scooter.
Scooter.
The last name is Scudieri. That's the best I can do.
I'm gonna guess that I don't know. Is that a fake last name or is that just?
Yeah, I think maybe he just goes by Scooter and his name is like Scudieri.
I assume that it must be something like that. But I have met parents who are really into giving their kids superhero names. So,
I just like that somebody named Scooter emailed us.
I know, it's great. And he had a thing that he wanted to say about The Witch, which we talked about last week.
Did we?
Yeah. you haven't, you're right, Bill?
I'm joking.
Okay. So he had to say, one important piece of information you guys didn't touch on too much was the fact that a lot of the family members lie to each other and keep secrets, had lustful thoughts about each other. Each character had a lack of faith in one way or another, and that he, Scooter, feels that the lack of faith was actually what allowed the devil or his minions, i.e. the witch, to get in and invade the family members', I won't say idyllic lives, but at least non-cursed lives. He then points the finger at the father, saying the father had arguably the strongest faith, and spoiler. So I won't read that part, but we did want to thank Scooter, and we as we were looking at this email, all said that we wished we had like another hour and a half to two hours to talk about The Witch. And someone on Twitter had likewise said, I could have listened to you guys for another hour. I would say that we could have talked for another hour, but I feel as though I legitimately was about to die towards the end of that. I was not in a good place. I was tired and I had been moving all weekend, but now I'm back. I'm in my house.
Woo! Refreshed.
Yeah.
Recharged.
Got my sound equipment back.
Got your power cord.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, let's dive into the reviews then. Bill Graham, why don't you give us your super short, incredibly crazy, I'm sure, review of Gods of Egypt, the newest film by director Alex Proyas, who is
not a bad director.
Bad filmmaker?
No. Yeah.
Question mark? He did The Crow. He did Dark City. He did iRobot, which
City.
I have a little bit of love for.
Dark City, a movie my friend once said, the movie too weird to live. It's so strange.
That is such a weird movie, and I love it.
I do too.
I still haven't seen it.
Oh,
so good.
Oh,
no.
All right, I own it, and I still haven't seen it yet. It's one of the few films that I actually own that I'm like, I'm going to get to you, but you cost a dollar, so I'll get to you like soon.
I've got a couple of criterions I still got to unwrap. All right, well, what did you think of Gods of Egypt?
Okay. So this film I saw mainly because it looked like a barn fire from all the trailers I had seen, and I like to say that I'm pretty up on films, and somehow this film literally jumped on my radar 3 months ago when I saw a trailer for it, and I was like, oh, this looks awful.
Yeah, and the first trailer hit, and people lost their goddamn minds.
Pretty much. I won't say that it elevates beyond that too much. Now, one thing that is fun, there was a film a couple of years ago, the attempted reboot of Conan the Barbarian that had, you know, some flashy visuals and was interesting looking, and that was actually kind of fun. It was dumb in the way that they inserted like modern dialogue into the film. I thought, like, at one point someone high-fives each other in Conan, and I was like, okay, this is going for all of
John Milius would never let that happen.
He's far too angry.
Low fives only. Low fives only. But so this film definitely embraces its schlock value. It definitely knows what it is. And I was having an interesting conversation after the film with a friend that was basically saying that it was a $50 million movie. And she kept on saying that. And I was like, this movie looks like it costs $150 million. So if it actually costs $50 million, I was quite impressed. And then she got on her, you know, little phone, got on the internet, the wonderful thing, and realized that she had not added a one in front of that. And so I was about to say,
I am on Box Office Mojo. Yeah. This was $140 million.
Yeah.
How is Alex Proyas still getting $140 million for movies?
And that's my biggest question is, who was asking for this film and then who greenlit it? Because I understand when you make a big blockbuster movie, it's going to cost a lot of money. And this is the kind of film that you can put up on a wall and say, okay, you won't make Guillermo del Toro's At the Mountain's Madness. You won't make certain other films, but you will make this for $150 million and then dump it in the middle of February. What?
Well, like, they're getting in just under the wire ahead of Batman v Superman, which is the big film that's going to overshadow this one.
Anyways, so this film, it definitely has The creatures in it are actually kind of pretty creative. The special effects at times are pretty decent. One of the really interesting things that they kind of use this idea is that the gods are about like 10 feet tall and everyone else is, you know, 5-6 feet, somewhere around there. And so there's a huge like difference in just the size of people. And one of the opening sequences is Koster Waldo. I can't remember.
Nikolai Koster Waldo.
Yeah.
Is it we'll Waldo? Him, really?
I think it is. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
We will call him Jamie Lannister from here on out.
Okay, that works.
But, anyways, so Jamie Lannister is like getting up after this like crazy like party, and he's about to take the throne, and they bathe him, and like all of these like little helpers are like sponge bathing him, and I realized while looking at it that someone had to literally stand in for Nikolai to be bathed, maybe a statue, maybe I don't know, some giant thing. And then on the other hand, he had to be like just sit in a bath while no one was bathing him and act like he was being bathed. It was I can't imagine what was going on in the green screen of this film. It's pretty crazy.
I love that you just gave me that image of like two different sound stages.
Yeah, just going on.
That's what I do. I just sit in a bath and wait to be bathed.
Amanda is incredibly dirty right now because no one ever comes to bathe her.
The cast is super, super, super white, except for the women. The women, they actually do a pretty decent job of the main love interest of the main human that's helping Nikolai out, Jaime Lannister out. He's the entire time he's got like this love interest, and she's actually kind of exotic looking. And then the love interest, who's the goddess of love, who's in love with Jaime Lannister as well, she's actually very exotic looking. And so I was like, oh, great job. And then I look at all the male actors in this film and I'm just like, you guys are just white as can be.
Well, there's Chadwick Boseman, who somebody said
he's in this film for like 10 minutes.
I really? Heard that he's like crazy during it.
Yes.
Really?
So he's the god of knowledge, and the entire time he talks in riddles, and you're just like,
this is amazing. I need to see this movie.
Yeah,
actually, you know what?
Like, so
special full review coming later this week.
I'm telling you guys, like, this is a movie to talk about for sure. It is just embraces everything that could be crazy. There is literally a airship that is floating by like 1,000 pigeons that just like that's how it levitates. And I
love
like,
a good airship.
This film, if the CGI battles when the gods turn into these like different creatures, if that wasn't as terrible as it is, the film overall wouldn't be as laughably bad. But those sequences, and they last a good 5 minutes, which is 4 minutes way too long. Every single time they turn into these like different creatures, it's, you just look at it and you're just like, oh, did y'all run out of money? What happened?
So all in all, would you say like this is bad enough to be good enough to see, or is it just not good?
Oh, this is definitely bad enough that it is good enough to see. I would say, like, if you go in understanding that this film is highly flawed, but it has a director that actually like cares about building certain things, you know, a world and stuff like that, that it doesn't play by any normal rules, except for, of course, you know, patriarchal society where all the women in the film basically do nothing but be love interests. Like, they don't even fight. And that's kind of depressing. That's one of the, I don't know if Proyas has ever had any very good female lead characters, but I found that aspect to be pretty glaring when you have all these beautiful women. And then it's just like, oh, so you're literally here for eye candy. Okay. Gotcha.
Who are like deities, who are like powerful deities. Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't fight at all. And it's just like, come on. Like, at least, you know, do something with the women. I don't know. Eh.
Do something with the women, Proyas.
Come on. Come on, man. But the other thing that I wanted to mention as well, and I think I'm particularly clever for having this description of him, but Gerard Butler just looks like someone just hosed him down and threw dirt on him. Like, he, like,
oh, man.
That's how they get.
I think Amanda's
him,
feeling that.
Like dark.
No.
Like, you're like Scottish, and he keeps his accent, of course, and they're like, ooh, you're Scottish. How do we darken you up?
Oh, well, so I thought you meant like you.
Like, he's covered
meant,
in
like
bronzer?
Swords and sandals, like,
oh yeah,
you know,
he's
dirty,
covered
but
in definite bronzer.
Oh, oh no.
And it looks and his hair, like, usually he's got a pretty decent like hair situation going on. His hair looks terrible throughout this film. I don't understand what is going on.
There's something about Gerard Butler where they're really trying to sustain his status as some sort of sex symbol, and he's looking rough. Like that.
Yeah.
That trailer for London is Falling, where you're supposed to believe he's more fit than Aaron Eckhart, is very unconvincing because he's got that Russell Crowe spread going on.
Yeah.
It's getting bad.
I mean,
he looks like he hits the pub quite a bit.
Well, I mean, look at his career. He must.
Yeah.
Right. So that's it.
Yeah, that's enough.
Just can't even. I'm looking forward to seeing this. My fiance is legitimately excited for this movie. So
I really wish they had released it in the summer, because I love going to the drive-in, and I feel like this would have been a perfect drive-in movie.
This is definitely a drive. Like this is a movie that, like, I'm usually not about audience interaction, but this is definitely like a movie that I'm like, yeah, this needs some audience interact. Like, I want to throw popcorn at the screen.
Stuff. Yeah,
yeah, nice. like every time Gerard Butler shows up on screen, I just want to throw like popcorn and be like, boo. So yeah, that's this kind of film.
All right. Well, awesome. So let's before we get into our feature review, I wanted to say that the Oscars are tonight.
What?
Right? Like I completely
what now?
Forgot about that. The Oscars are tonight, and so I'm just curious. Everyone always says I don't care about the Oscars, especially critics, because we're like, we know what the best are. The Oscars doesn't do it. But is there a race this year that you have a horse in spite of yourself?
No. This no. year is no, not
I
at all.
I will say that I need World of Tomorrow to win Best Animated Short.
Yeah, if it doesn't, that's going to be quite a surprise, I feel like.
Judging by the age of the Oscar voters and everything like that, I think that's a pretty uphill battle.
I'm sure that any other super team is probably going to win.
I think in any other like film critic society, it probably has a strong chance, but in this one in particular, I'm not sure. But I do want to say that I do feel like I'm pretty outnumbered, especially here at the film stage. In I won't say I care about the Oscars, but it's definitely something that like I follow. I mean, I listen to a couple of like this is the biggest thing that the film industry basically like rallies around. I mean, it is the Super Bowl, and
right.
it's one of those things that I follow pretty, or not closely, but especially like the last few months of the year, I definitely start to, you know, pick up on things, and I make sure that I watch every single Best Picture nominee and everything like that. But it's gotten to a point where when the King's Speech won over, what was that? It was over Black Swan and Social Network. When it beat those two films, I was just like, you know what, guys? I really don't care anymore.
I think my breaking point was when The Artist won.
I like The Artist, but
you can go to hell. Not deserve to win over Tree of Life.
No, I'm not saying that, but I actually like The Artist.
Also, that dog wasn't even the best dog in a movie that year.
For real.
Who was the best dog?
The dog in Beginners.
Oh, yeah. Which, by the way, I watched recently.
Oh, so did I. I tweeted about it. I was like, who let me watch Beginners? Oh, God, why am I crying?
I will say, if the Oscars was a two-hour show, maybe even like a two-and-a-half-hour show, I think it would be much better.
Well, fuck yeah.
if it actually focused on the things we actually care about, which is, when someone wins an award, give them a little platform, give them a little time, and then, you know.
But then how would we get our like tribute to movie musicals medley with Rihanna and
care?
I gotta admit, I kinda like the schmaltzy train wreck musical numbers that they do.
Oh, they're so
both
terrible,
of you, to
though.
Hell with you.
But they're so bad. It's kind of like, what is it, the Rob Lowe Snow White debacle? Did you ever hear about that?
No.
Oh, look it up.
What?
All right.
The Rob Lowe Snow White debacle. Yeah. It's like a famously bad Oscar moment.
So here's just again. So Amanda doesn't give a shit. Bill, is there a one specific race that you want a particular film to win?
A particular film to win.
Or person,
as long as,
like any
as
any
long as the Revenant
race.
Doesn't win.
You just want the Revenant to lose.
Yeah, just okay. lose everything.
So I need World of Tomorrow to win. You need the Revenant to lose. And Amanda couldn't give a shit.
I just wanna see some tap dancing.
God damn.
Out of Chris Rock?
No.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I mean, yeah, he's the host. You said that, so. That's all I want in this world is tap dancing out of Chris Rock. All right. Well,
if you pair him up with Hugh Jackman, I'm sure they can make it work.
I was gonna say Hugh could do it. So that's it for our Oscar talk. there will be no special thing where we talk about the winners.
Unless no. Mad Max wins.
Unless Mad Max wins. And then you can expect a 4-hour long podcast.
I will be very surprised if that wins.
If Mad Max wins, I don't know what I'll do. I'll probably like just get in my car and murder some people. Out of joy. Just witness me. All right. So that is that. Let us now move into our feature review. Oh, which geez. Is of the newest film, but from John Hillcoat, and that is 999.
How's your job going?
You know, spend my time trying to make a difference. I know how it sounds.
You gotta make a difference. You ain't gonna make a fucking difference. Forget about that. Your job? Out monster the monster and get home at the end of the night.
That is the trailer to 999, newest film from director John Hillcoat, who'd previously done The Road, The Proposition, and Lawless.
That song is amazing, by
the
way.
Oh, my God.
In that's Cypress
trailer,
Hill?
Yeah, it is.
Nice.
Well, whoever those little kids are, oh, man.
They're going to grow up one day
them.
And realize what they were a part of, and they're going to be like the kid from The Shining. So, anyway, this movie, John Hillcoat, it stars... everyone.
Yeah.
This let me run it down for you guys. Chiwetel Ejiofor, great guy. Casey Affleck, fantastic. Anthony Mackie, best thing in the Marvel universe. Woody Harrelson, hot as can be. Aaron Paul, awesome in Breaking Bad. Kate Winslet, once again affecting an Eastern European accent. Gail Gadot, Wonder Woman. Norman Reedus,
Wonder Butt.
Wonder Butt. We'll get into that. Norman Reedus from The Walking Dead. Again, person who's the best thing in the thing they're in. Michael Kenneth Williams, Omar from The Wire.
Oh, my God.
And Clifton Collins Jr., who is by far one of my favorite... Oh, my God, he's in this?
Yep.
Yeah.
I love him.
This movie has everyone, and it goes everywhere, and gives us everything. Let us see
so
if
much.
We appreciate what this movie is doing. Amanda Waltz, what did you think?
Oh, you gotta start with me. Okay.
Yes, what did you think of 999?
I really had no interest in seeing this movie.
Did you not see the trailer?
I did, and I did not. Well, I read two reviews.
Okay.
One from Amy Nicholson, which was very glowing.
Oh, yeah, her over at MTV.com.
Yeah, and she actually related it to the All Lives Matter hashtag in a way that I thought was interesting and intriguing. But then I read our own Michael Snydel. I still don't know if I'm saying the last name right.
Ask someone about that.
I know I need to. But he and I are like good Twitter buddies, and I still don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Do it right now.
Snydel. That's my favorite, so
no,
I'm going to say that one.
I mean, tweet him.
Tweet at him now. Get an answer.
Okay.
Get a live answer.
He can send me, like, the phonetic, like...
Yeah.
But he wrote a very damning review of it. I think he gave it, like, a D+ or something. I mean, it was... He really bashed it. And so I read these two very different reviews, which made me way more interested in it. Another reason I really wasn't that excited about it, though, is I saw a clip from it of Casey Affleck and Anthony Mackie, the scene in the convenience store, and Casey Affleck's delivery is not good.
He's doing a lot of his brother, I think. Like,
there's something about like his performance.
He's gotten bigger a little bit. Like, it looks like he's maybe bulked up a little bit or started to.
I don't know if he's a petite man.
I know, but like he's got this like slouch shoulder thing where it feels like he's hunching his shoulders, and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to look like
he
Ben?
Looks bored to be in this movie. He looks bored, like he doesn't want to be there. Oh, and
I think that he's making a choice, and we can get into that when we talk about.
Whatever. I know. But I actually I was like, I'm going to give this film a chance. I might just being misled. I don't know, guys. I thought this movie was very stale. I thought it was a very stale crime thriller. Just the action bits were very, I found them to be very clumsy, just not elegant at all. I don't know. I just think that these kinds of films feel very dated to me. Like, they've been done. Michael Mann has done them. Scorsese has done it. Everyone's done it. It's done. Like, it's not gritty anymore. It's not edgy anymore. This movie is not doing anything new or fresh or interesting with it. And it is just a slog. And my God, the acting from everybody is just terrible. It is. Kate Winslet, I wrote in my notes at one point, I was like, Kate Winslet, what happened?
I know.
What happened? She is, her accent is terrible. like egregiously so.
I can't wait for my chance to talk.
Yeah.
I'm going to disagree with literally everything that you've said.
I'm so happy that you do, Brian. I was waiting for a moment. I was waiting for it to turn. I was waiting for it to get
exciting.
It goes exciting.
The opposite direction.
If you're not
locked in within the first like 10 minutes of this movie, it's not going to go very well for you.
And just the cast, too. I just felt like Hillcoat said, I want every dirtbag actor you have. I want Norman Reedus. I want Aaron Paul.
Oh, God. Aaron Paul's the worst.
He looks like he's wearing a wig in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
It was so distracting.
It looks like he just got out of the shower, like, every single time he's
on
camera.
Have
you heard
Atlanta.
Of a towel?
What do you expect?
They are in Hotlanta. That's true. Which I actually like because that's the very different setting for a film like this. I just feel like every movie like this is set in like, you know, Chicago or New York or LA.
I mean, even that though, they don't do a whole lot with it. Like, let's be honest.
Well, because I think that Atlanta is a sort of big place for national security.
Yeah, it's headquarters.
Is it?
Yeah. Wow. The like Atlanta's, it's funny because my sister's moving to Atlanta or Macon, like one of those areas, because her job is like about in between.
Oh, really?
And I was like, so what does Atlanta have other than the Coke bottling plant and the airport? And she was like, no,
Peaches.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Like, they've got that giant fuck off airport.
She can look forward to a lot of long, terrible commutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. And I after I got out of this movie, I was like, I got to text Lauren and tell her to get the fuck out of there.
But yeah, it's I was not invested at all. And I was really looking for something to grab onto. Woody Harrelson he's so typecast. I feel like his role in Rampart he's just been repeating it, and it's just gotten worse to where it's just become this grotesque caricature of like a dick swinging good old boy asshole cop in a way that I'm just like, I'm done. I just can't do this anymore. And honestly, I remember thinking if Harrelson had been switched out with Nick Cage, I may have been more invested in this movie.
No.
There was something about his.
Pull up the original casting because.
I think the only thing that was different was Michael B. Jordan was going to be in this. And
oh no, Shia LaBeouf was going to be in this too.
Oh my,
yeah, because he had just come off of Lawless with Hillcoat. I'm sure he was going to be the. We haven't even said what this movie's about. I kind of skipped the plot summary. I guess I should say so. There's a band of dirty cops led by two former private military contractor guys who are indebted to the Russian mob in Atlanta, and they have to pull off a heist, and they realize that the only way that they're going to have enough time without interference from the cops is to pull a 999, which is the code for an officer down, and they know that every police officer in the city will converge on that point, and that will give them the time they need to pull off their heist.
But it's like, what, 10 minutes, I think?
Yeah, they want 10 minutes. So they know that if there's a 211, which is a break-in or a armed robbery, people will, like the cops specifically, and they say this a couple times, like cops protect their own. So if it's between an officer down and, you know, an armed robbery, that place is going to get robbed.
Right. And that was the thing about Nicholson's review that I found really interesting, is that she's saying that they're manipulating this cops protect their own mentality where, okay, there are so many people get murdered in this movie and it doesn't matter. But a cop goes down and every unit in the city is there. So, and I understand that, but I feel like that logic can be applied.
That's the film's reality, though. That's not necessarily actual reality.
That's what it's talking about, too.
Yeah, and it
I
is.
I believe that is, in a way, you know, obviously it's heightened for a film, but I think that is a reality of our world that this film is exploiting to tell this story.
But I don't feel like it's focused on enough.
The funny thing, though...
I don't think it is at all. I think it gets... Because this feels like this is three movies in one.
It is. It really does.
Everything feels so disconnected. And I remember thinking that. And then as I was thinking that, like while watching the movie, probably like halfway through, my husband leaned over and said, this feels like multiple movies in one movie. So it was like, as I was thinking that, he had the same thought. And it was just, I just feel like it doesn't congeal as nicely as it should. By the end, I felt like there were some really, and we can cover this. There were some tense moments in the end, but it was too late. I just felt like it was too late at that point. I just wasn't invested at all. And like I said before, there's nothing really, I don't think there's really anything new to be mined. I mean, you can say, yeah, this is a reflection of like the current political climate, especially regarding police brutality and just how we're looking at, like how we're scrutinizing authority figures. But I feel like you could apply that to so many other movies. Like this isn't, you know, and I don't think that this movie does that in a way that's really impactful at all. Like, I don't think it's like, yeah, it's, and also its racial politics are troubling. I mean, fact that like all of the bad guys are either Black, Latino, or Russian Jewish. Are you fucking kidding me?
I don't know why they decided.
That is a huge problem.
It's not Russian like Jews. The Russian Jews get a lot of bad press. I actually thought that was like a pretty
It's the fact that the two good guys are these two white bread, podunk, fucking good old boy cops.
There is so much moral uncertainty and ambiguity in this movie I know who you're talking about, but it's incredibly short-sighted to say that the two good guys are the two white guys.
But
I don't want to say more. We can talk about it in spoilers.
Yeah, we
can. I inherently disagree with your point.
That's fine, and you can. I just...
That's her point, yep.
This is just not a strong enough movie, just in general, for me to really, like, care that much. So
well, I can.
All right, well Bill, what did you think?
So I actually thought the action bits are the best parts of this film. The first 10 minutes are really good. What they do, there's these key moments in each action sequence that they need to do, and it's does it push the story forward? Does it push the characters forward? And each one of these action bits specifically pushes one, two, or in this case, five, six different characters forward. It gives you all the little details about what each individual character is. So the film starts off with this bank heist that goes wrong because, of course, one of the guys is just a jack off, and he doesn't have his stuff together, and so he takes money, and they're not after money.
That's greed more than not
sure.
having his stuff together.
That's being an idiot first and foremost, because
right.
they should have gone over the fact, hey, we're after one thing, we don't need anything else, don't do anything else. And then what does he do? He sees a bunch of money and he puts it in the bag and he's like, yeah, woo. And then of course it lights off this dye smoke that's just red and just comes out in the middle of their vehicle. And for some reason, they still manage to pull it off quite well from that point on. I won't give too much away, but the scene when when the red dye is like billowing out of the vehicle and they're all like getting out in the middle of this freeway, I think that's a pretty iconic scene. Obviously, it's used for the trailer. It's used for the poster. They definitely knew what they were getting themselves into when they set up that shot. But I think it looks fantastic. I think it's got a great visual flair to it. And then there's another sequence in when they're trying to bust this this drug dealer in these projects. And Casey Affleck has a... it's not a riot shield, because a riot shield is usually clear. It's some kind of...
I think it's just like a bulletproof shield.
It's like
we'll call it
breaching shield.
Exactly. Yeah, it's used mainly for like SWAT teams and stuff like that. And he basically has, I wrote in my review, he has a conga line of officers behind him that like every time he takes a step, they take a step. Every time he takes a step, they take a step. And it's like, all right, here we go. Everybody stay behind me. And I thought that entire sequence, it lasts about 10 minutes. I thought it was fantastic. The way it was filmed, the way it was shot, it was very dynamic. And that one in particular really establishes Casey Affleck's character and establishes Anthony Mackie's character. And it shows how much teamwork and how much camaraderie has to happen, how much they have to work together and trust each other, that when I say clear the right room and you say clear, that right room is cleared and I can keep moving forward. And I need you to do that, not give me any politics, not to. And so it's one of the few moments where you can tell this is the time for them to get things done without any politics involved, without any hoops to jump through. They just say, hey, clear that right room. Okay, it's clear. Okay, we're moving forward. We're moving forward. Nobody's going to stop them. Nobody's going to say, hey, you didn't do that right. You didn't do that by protocol or anything like that. And so I think those are the key moments in this film that really, really shine. Like I said, they push the characters forward. The action is pretty dynamic. It's filmed really well. And then every single time that the action isn't moving forward, every single time that the film just stops to let you in on more of the plot, it just gets more and more either cliched or just flat out confusing.
I was not confused for a second during this movie.
Okay, well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Did they ever tell you why these special forces guys are working with these cops?
Yeah, because Norman Reedus has Aaron Paul as a younger brother, and Aaron Paul says, we can trust these guys, I trained them.
Why would you ever listen to Aaron Paul in this film?
Because obviously they've pulled up heists before, and everything went fine.
Well, he's a very super unreliable character.
And there's even a point where Norman Reedus says, look, I know he's been clean for 3 months, I know he fucked up, but he's all right.
Who dies in the first act.
Spoilers! What the fuck?
BT Dubs. That's not a spoiler.
Yes, it happens.
That's the first fucking act.
That's not the first spoiler.
Oh, come on.
That happens in like the middle of the film, Amanda.
That happens really early in the film. Oh, that does not happen in the middle of the film.
You don't believe that is a spoiler shows me how little regard for this movie you have. If it's something wherein the audience goes, ooh, what a shocking development, I'm glad I didn't know about that before I walked in, then it's a spoiler, and we can talk about it in the spoiler section.
He does not die halfway through the film.
It doesn't matter. You're not expecting it.
Oh, fine. Okay.
Let me ask you something. When you saw the second Bourne movie, did you see the second Bourne movie?
No, I haven't seen
it. Are we
going to
spoil
it?
Don't spoil the
There's a major event that happens in like the first 15 minutes of the second Bourne film.
Yes, that's true.
And I would say that it's a spoiler.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, there's a lot of this film that I think just does not connect or just completely went past me. I thought it was absolutely hilarious what they did to establish that the Russian Jewish mob is evil and dirty, because they basically have these people like duct taped, tied together inside the trunk. They're bloody. That's the first sequence that you see with Kate Winslet. And then what do you see after that?
That's technically the second sequence.
Oh, ugh.
Because you have her reading to her nephew
in that same sequence. She goes out to the vehicle. So yes, it's still one sequence.
All right. The second half of the first sequence.
Anyways, what do they do to establish how bad they are again? Oh, they tie up more people and they put them in the trunk of a car. And then what do they do one more time, just to be clear that, you know, these guys are bad, is they put them in the back of like a moving van, and then there's a bunch of people tied up. And you're just like, what are you like? You can just tell me these are the bad guys and I'll go with it. I signed up for a cops and robbers movie. I got the stakes.
Yeah. Like, it's very sloppy.
Yeah. I don't need you to show me like people tied up to show. And they even make a mention of the fact that Vladimir Putin is afraid of Kate Winslet's wife or husband.
Yeah.
Husband. And
who's in like the gulags.
Yeah. In the gulags. Yeah. And I'm like, really, you need that to establish that this dude's bad? You just tell me he's a... And the other thing is, apparently the cops in Atlanta have no idea the Russian mob is working within them, because they try and get some stuff done later on in the film. I won't spoil it, but they seem very surprised that the Russian Jewish mob are working in their territory. No, they're like, who are these people?
They
who
know that the people? Russian Jewish mob is in there.
They don't seem to have a whole lot of...
There are literally headlines in the movie on newspapers that say police suspect Russian mob involvement. They know them, but the problem is that...
How long has this been happening?
But that's not... This movie follows the gang unit, which is focused on gangs, not the mafia. The federal government has purview in mafia-related cases.
Because she says that she has the feds in her pocket.
Sure. She mentions that. But I don't know. I thought the gangs are kind of related to the mafia when...
The way the gangs are related to the mafia is, if you realize, every time you see Kate Winslet shipping off another group of people who are soon to be dead and currently wishing they were dead, they are gang related. They are
I didn't put that together.
I thought they were just these gangs.
Okay. Interesting.
I'm going to hop in for a second.
Go ahead, Brian.
So much in this movie that depends on nuance and like detail oriented focus that I feel as though the desire to simply say cops and robbers is denying a lot of people a firm enjoyment and like clear understanding of this film. And that is driving me crazy, because as we were sitting there, my fiance and I, and we were watching this movie, and I noticed how much detail went into everything and how the what's the word? I'm so angry I can't even remember the word for exposition. As the exposition was flowing, I realized that this was a movie that wasn't going to have the kinds of scenes that we are used to nowadays as a movie viewing audience. This does feel like a movie that, as you said, has been done before. But how long ago since it was really done well? I liked Black Hat, but even that movie didn't do this as well as Black Hat was trying to do. And that came from Michael fucking Mann. We don't get movies like this a lot anymore. You know, I walked out, I was like, what book or comic book or TV show was that adapted from? It wasn't. It was just a story of the law and the blank gray morality that infects these people. And it's great. And these characters and these actors playing them are great. And it's so strange that a movie like this should feel exotic. And it does. And it hurt me as I walked out to wonder, when is the next time we're going to get a movie like this? And we're probably not. Because no one appreciates it anymore. The next person who wanted to direct Heat is out there somewhere. And they're probably never going to get something. And they're going to make a really small movie and then get snapped up by fucking Marvel. And you know what? I can't deal with it anymore. This and Sicario give me hope. And you know what? Denis Villeneuve is about to make fucking Blade Runner 2. So we've lost him.
No, I think that dude's crazy. So he's going to make a crazy Blade Runner and then he's going to be like, hey, made some money. Here's what I want to make next. And people are going to be like, okay, cool. So
it's so hard for me to sit here and like just listen to all this stuff that I categorically disagree with.
I'm so sorry. It's so hard
and
for you,
that
Brian.
Is
I'm so sorry. It's so hard for you.
Disprove. And that, like, that's it. This is the last one, I guess. I'm watching the last dodo get murdered, and it's because everyone says it's ugly.
Quit being such a drama queen, Brian.
No.
This is trite, stale, just, so edgy, so gritty. Ugh. Like, it's done. Like, what else do we need from these kinds of movies? What else needs to be said? Nothing. It's already all been said.
Why do we bother creating any art anymore, Amanda?
But the way that this movie is done, the way it's shot, the way it's acted, it's not new. It's not doing anything new. This isn't a new spin. It's not a new twist. It's not like the concept is intriguing to a degree, and it just does nothing with it. Like, there's no buildup. Like, there's literally no buildup to the whole heist with when they bring in the 999 aspect of it. It's just because it's just like,
what do you mean
they're
there's
just
no build up? The whole movie
there's
is
no
build up
to that. You forget it's even gonna happen because there's just like piles and piles and piles of this other shit and all these other things going on and all these other like movies that are going on within this one movie.
One of the things that I liked most about this film was the amount of story there was and the clarity and economy with which it was delivered.
Clarity?
Yes!
Yeah. No!
This movie is crystal fucking clear.
Oh, no, it's not.
I have to say I was very confused at
that's not the movie's
the
fault. I don't understand.
There are things that happen in this movie that never come back.
Like
that
what?
Are done once, never happen again. There is a scene in the beginning where while they're robbing a bank, he has that woman
she gets shot
down on a napkin
to
get her lipstick. And I was like, oh, maybe that's his thing. Maybe that's like his calling card. Maybe that's what he does
you
every time
know
they
if
pull
that's
heist.
His thing, because they never do another heist.
They never, like,
But they don't play that off. Like
they don't do anything
you're just
with
like,
it.
What is that? And then there's also a woman that gets shot in that opening heist that Norman Reedus takes special attention on, and nothing ever becomes of that either. I thought that was like a big no-no that they weren't supposed to actually like shoot anybody throughout this entire
they're
like
spraying
sequence.
Bullets into like just commuters.
Yeah. But like only one person actually gets hit, and like he focuses on it and he looks concerned, And she I think she's like clutching her chest. It's definitely like an upper respiratory like hit, and she's looking at herself like bleeding, and you can tell there's like concern on his face, and yet the film never touches on that ever again.
How would you like them to? He's part of Blackwater. He and his friend were going to be charged for war crimes, but their witnesses disappeared. It's fairly obvious that Norman Reedus at this movie is suffering from some kind of morality or just experience-driven post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's obviously not helping.
Oh, I never got that.
Oh my God.
I never got that. How are you getting that, Brian?
Because it's there.
No, it's not.
It's fucking on the screen. I know that Anthony Mackie has a character name? Because they say it. Like, how do I know that they're police officers? Because they're wearing badges. Like, this is just the movie existing and me taking from it what it's giving.
It certainly exists. It's certainly a movie that exists. That's for certain. Oh my God.
It's incredible to me that you could be asking these questions. It doesn't matter. Like, you see someone in the background wearing a yellow hat, and you're like, why didn't I see that person? Because they're not integral to the story. They're a piece of set dressing. They're flavoring to add to the tone. You never see the crazy dancing woman on top of the dumpster again. Who gives a fuck?
Exactly.
Not everything needs to play back in. It's not... If it's not queued up to be...
That's just bad writing. That's just such bad writing.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
It's fucking life.
It's just... There's just shit just thrown everywhere. It's just so cluttered. And like... wait, is this important? Wait, is this important? Is this going to play in later? Wait, should I pay attention to this? No? Okay. It's just bad writing. That's all it is.
So this was a Blacklist script. And
yeah.
It's written by Matt Cook. And I read the script a couple of years ago when it first hit the Blacklist, and I was quite impressed with it. I thought the way it established each individual character, the way that it ends quite differently from this film, and we can get into that later. But the script, I think, works extremely well because, like, let's be honest, when you're reading a screenplay and they say a character name, it's literally on the script. Right. Mm-hmm. So every single time a character speaks, they're usually speaking towards somebody. Someone is in that room. So, you know, very quickly, like, who each of these individual characters are, and you get a firm sense of who they are without actually having to have them show up in a scene or specifically say their name or give like a character quirk or whatever. You just know, OK, this is that guy. This is that guy. This. OK, cool. And what happens is in action beats and like when you're getting a lot of exposition and stuff like that, it's very easy to keep track of these individual people. And I think in this film in particular, so it's got basically like six or seven different main characters, and that becomes very confusing for, I think, now, Brian, you obviously take a different tact on this, but I think for most audiences, that is way too many people to handle all at once that we're getting used to very quickly and without having them take a long, drawn out moment, because this is not a film that lets you really breathe or anything like that. It's go, go, go.
It's a ruthlessly efficient film.
Okay, and they basically drop you in the middle of this film,
yep.
And if you're not able to swim, you're going to be left behind very quickly. And I think a lot of this film, what it feels like is it feels like there's information missing, and I understand
Hold on, let me talk.
Like, I love Mad Max, right? And that's a film that it got a lot of criticism from some people that, well, I don't understand what's going on. Who's the motivation? And I can understand how some people view that in particular, because that is a film that there's subtlety in the way that they refer to each character's motivations. There's also moments, yes, where they literally say out loud, you know, certain aspects, but that's a film that caught a lot of people off guard in how quickly an audience could just completely feel, you know, overwhelmed by a world being established without actually establishing it, right? It establishes it within the film itself, within the action, within the beats and things like that. And I think this is another one of those films that does it to a sloppier degree. I think there are establishing bits, but it's too quick. It's too fast for me to know that I should care about this sequence versus another. And there's a moment in this film.
If you are walking through a movie wondering what parts you should care about, you're doing it wrong.
Okay, but there are 7 or 8 different main characters in this film, and I was really curious how they got tied into the Russian mob, and apparently Chiwetel Ejiofor has a kid? What?
Yes, he has and a I was kid just like, with the main person's
yeah,
sister.
And I'm like, okay, explain that. Like, what happened here? How does... And...
Well, because like, she's like, using...
Why?
I did understand why? That, because she is using his son against him just to basically...
Yes.
Blackmail him into doing these heists, but then we'll go into spoilers, we'll cover it more. Yeah,
I don't know.
I laughed at so many inappropriate moments in this film. It was it was just so ridiculous.
The other thing I want to say about this film is the typical, like, my concern was actually that Hillcoat wasn't going to be able to do enough to keep me interested in the action beats. And I mean, like I said earlier, I felt the opposite. I felt the action beats were the best part of this film. I felt that was really where the film found its legs, found its life. And it was all the slower moments that I usually enjoy from Hillcoat the most that I felt were extremely lacking or just you know, plain cliche. I mean, Brian, you really can't argue against the fact that they established the Russian mob incredibly sloppily. Like, it's such a cliche.
But it's done so quickly and so efficiently that I don't have a problem with that.
3 times is efficient?
You have the first time when you're seeing her on her own outside of the nail salon
that's
after
enough.
Being with the son.
That's
and
enough.
Then it's not the second time they establish it isn't for the audience, it's for Michael. He is arriving and seeing these things that have obviously been placed there for him to see. We know who these people are. And now
Chiwetel
Ejiofor is coming up and seeing that it's a game of brinksmanship. Mm. They're showing off in front of this man who is extremely important to them, but also 100% worthless. His character is one of the most tragic people in this film. And that's what that's for. You have to realize that not everything in the movie is happening for the audience. Sometimes it's happening for the characters.
Sure, but if you're telling me that the Russian mob needs to tell Chiwetel Ejiofor that they've worked with before, that they are dangerous people, I don't know what's going on in this film's reality.
It's not just that. It's a we don't give a fuck. We're going to do really heinous shit in front of you because we know you have nowhere to go.
Do something
a
little bit different.
Did you see the movie Maps to the Stars?
I don't know.
There's
don't,
a point
maybe?
In that film where Julianne Moore's character is with this girl who's like her personal assistant.
Oh, no. I didn't see
and
that.
She's already like treated her like shit and let her know she doesn't care about her. But at some point she's talking to her with like the bathroom door open while going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
That's completely extraneous because
does that happen
the
times?
Person what?
Does it happen 3 times?
No, I'm saying you already have the other bad stuff happening.
Okay.
And it's just a way of showing, I don't care about you. You have no power. I will be my ugly, open self in front of you.
Wait.
And it doesn't matter.
How is that not for the audience? That's establishing the relationship between these two characters and showing, not telling, how these characters interact. How is that not for the audience? How is anything not for the audience? It doesn't make any sense.
Because and that's what you're saying is completely different from what Bill was saying. Bill was saying we're just seeing these people being bad. You just said we're seeing how these people respond to Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Well, I'm talking about you're like using Maps of the Stars. I don't.
Yeah, that wasn't a good example in that case because that was definitely
obviously this is why you didn't get 999. What I'm saying is that we see certain things and come to understand certain things in different ways than the characters do.
Sure, but just like how that guy gets or that woman gets shot on the highway, and just like how one of the characters has that girl bite down on that piece of napkin so he has her like lipstick mark, just like how those are different and they don't necessarily get recalled back again, just like how you're saying, okay, but that's not necessarily for us to like utilize later. What I'm saying is if you show me someone in the trunk of a car once and you use that motif twice, I'm getting tired. Third time, that's just lazy. Use something else. I understand what you're saying, that it's to establish fear.
It's also not an interesting way to like show that you're a dangerous person.
Exactly. Like it's just so cliche. And I'm like, I understand what you're saying, Brian, but I'm saying you have the ability as a filmmaker, as a writer, and that's the other thing is he's changed some stuff from Matt Cook's screenplay, but as a writer, as a filmmaker, you have the ability to say, hey, why are we using this motif again? This is really this is like bad guy 101, having someone in the trunk of a car. Let's do something different. How about we chop someone's leg off right in front of Chiwetel because they're, I don't know, did something.
Yeah, they have that like kosher
like
butcher
that.
Place.
Well, that's they don't
they don't do anything with it.
Yeah, I thought they were going to do something with that.
Yeah,
I
do nothing with it.
There's a moment
this
in that film
legitimately
where they're walking.
Exhausting conversation to me.
Okay. Anyways,
like that's to me a boring thing to do. To have a butcher shop and then butcher someone. Come on. I saw that and I was like, oh, are they like cutting a person up? But no, it wasn't. It was just a pig, or probably not a pig, since it was a kosher Jewish butcher shop. No,
well,
it was probably
bless
some
they had to
beef.
Bless the person before they dismember them.
Well, of course, because they're kosher.
But I think what Bill was saying before, just touching what Bill was saying before about how there's too many characters, you know, and I think there's been films like this that have been done before that have quite a few characters and you're able to follow it. I think what it is in this movie is you don't spend enough time with the characters in a way that is just like, that you realize that like they have any sort of like inner turmoil. Like the whole thing with Anthony Mackie's character and Casey Affleck's character is they are basically like thinking about, because Casey Affleck isn't involved with their deal at all. He's this new cop on the block. He's totally like oblivious to anything that's going on. And
I'll actually pause you there because I think I think he's much smarter than definitely Anthony Mackie's character gives him credit for, especially initially. Now he does.
I disagree.
He does do something quite dumb in the middle of that raid that I was like, oh wait, I thought you were like a decorated veteran, and you know I was like that was like cop 101, I thought, but anyways, go ahead, Amanda.
We'll have to get into spoilers to talk about that deeper, I think.
I'm realizing that we should probably, I mean, do you want to go into spoilers right now? I feel like we might as well.
I think we might as well, because sure. I don't think anyone's going to be moved amongst us.
No.
I don't know. I'm kind of floating in the middle.
But are we in spoilers now? So I'll just finish this.
Spoiler warning.
Spoilers. Spoiler warning, everybody. So the whole thing with they are targeting Casey Affleck as their 999. Like he's going to be the cop that they take out. And the whole thing with the raid that you were talking about, Bill, which I actually thought was really done in an interesting way, because I feel like movies usually they just like bust into a building and they're just running from room to room, and that's not how they do it. So I think the procedural aspect of it was, like, trying to be more accurate with it, I thought was, you know, that was admirable. But the whole thing is Anthony Mackie is struggling with the guy that they were targeting, and they're wrestling with this gun, and then right before Mackie gets shot, or right before the guy has a chance to shoot him, Affleck runs in and shoots him and basically saves Mackie. So the whole thing is that Mackie is supposed to feel tormented that they are targeting Affleck because he saved his life, which you get that just from a logical standpoint. You're like, sure. Oh, he would feel bad because this man saved his life. But I think acting wise, you'd never get that from Mackie, like ever. I mean, I didn't get that. Even in the scenes, because there's like scenes of them. And like I said, the scenes, and I agree with Bill that there's like the scenes are too quick and there's too much going on where it's like it doesn't settle down to let you like really sit with these characters and see this like and see anything like budding between them or see any progression. There's just like there's that scene where they're basically like hanging out on what, like an abandoned strip clubs like and stuff. It's really weird.
That,
like, the places
that place
where they hang out.
Packed. I don't know about you, but
there was
one scene where they're hanging out.
They're
having a meeting. Yeah.
There's one part where they're hanging out in an abandoned strip club and it's just them, and then they go back to the strip club and the strip club's full of naked women. At that point. And that's when you really see like Mackie and Affleck hanging out and being buddies, but then just as you're sort of like watching them interact, then Aaron Paul's character runs in and Mackie beats the crap out of him. There's just like, I don't know, there's just so much stuff going on, and I don't know, I just didn't think it gelled enough to really make you like feel for any of the characters. And I don't know. It's not that I didn't care what happened to anybody. I wanted to care. I really wanted to care that like Casey Affleck was unknowingly being targeted and that Mackie felt bad about it, or that Chiwetel Ejiofor's character Michael is like just torn up over the fact that like he has to do this last heist because this awful woman is basically like holding his child hostage. But it just didn't, like, those are such interesting conceits, but they just don't pay off at all.
Well, I think what there's two things that I found really, really weird. So the first thing that I found weird was that Casey Affleck's character basically throughout this entire film is this kind of cop that is at first is established to be kind of this cocky dude that's going to take down the leader of this gang, mm-hmm. or like a lead lieutenant of this gang right in front of like all of his other buddies. And that like, that is not okay. That is not a good move. You're not going to get any of these other dudes to talk. And he's like, yeah, but if I don't shut him down right there, I'm not going to get any respect from any of these dudes. Mm-hmm. And so there's one of those kind of, oh, okay, so he is actually saying, I understand what you're saying, but also I have to stand up for myself as a cop. Otherwise, these guys aren't going to take me seriously at all. Like, why would they ever talk to me if they didn't feel like I could take some action that isn't necessarily okay in the gang, you know, protocol, you know? And so it does that. And then so you're like, oh, okay, so this guy is a little bit more, you know, brainy than you're kind of giving him credit for at first. And so during that gunfight sequence, when they're busting that drug dealer, what happens, the moment that I thought was kind of weird was that he throws out his gun, the gang leader, right, mm-hmm. or the drug dealer, he throws out his gun. And it's very obvious to me and Anthony Mackie's character that that's bait. And then what does Casey Affleck's character do? He just straight up like sees the gun and then decides to just go out into open space. And I was
he's charging for a new piece of cover. I mean,
You have cover.
But they had been in an extended, like, 30-second long firefight with this guy. It was clear that they weren't going to get anywhere from their current position.
Whoa, hold on. He just threw out his gun. So if you're telling me that they don't think that he's going to get anywhere within that, what I saw it as was bait, which basically means he's throwing out that gun and Casey Affleck thinks, oh, okay, now's my time to apprehend this dude.
No, he was just trying to change I mean, here's the thing. Do you remember the scene you saw with Casey Affleck and his wife right before that scene?
Yeah, you're talking about the video he's watching.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and she asks, like, are you sulking? He is very clearly going through the kind of withdrawal that we saw in something like The Hurt Locker.
Sure.
Right. So he's in the middle of a firefight, and he's not going to stay down and be safe because he's not looking at pictures of soldiers being safe. He's watching an IED explode a roadway in front of a car.
I think he was involved in that sequence.
He wants more danger. It's weird because he almost has a death wish, and he's the one that they picked for the 999.
I didn't see it that way. He's danger chasing.
He fucking takes a lieutenant down in front of all the people. Why? Because he doesn't give a shit.
What's going to happen in that situation? He's got backup all around him.
I know, and that's how he feels.
Because he's a cocky fucking good old boy.
I wouldn't say that he's cocky. I think that he's actually fairly far from cocky.
Well, it's just
then. Why does he have Velcro? Like, why does he have bulletproof vests? Why does he want the riot shield?
Fucking
in front of
issue.
Him?
I don't know what you want from me.
Okay, but he gets shot like a punk. Like he gets shot like a rookie punk, and it's like
he gets shot, dude, like everyone gets shot with a fucking gun. What are you talking about?
Anthony Mackie does not get shot with a gun.
What are you saying? He gets shot like a punk.
Because when the guy throws out the gun, it looks to me.
I don't believe that he's not like, oh, he's out of bullets. I'm just going to walk over to him. He's still crouched. He's still got a fire position. He's moving.
He's moving from cover to what?
To more cover. What is wrong with you, Bill?
Wow, you guys are really dissecting the shit out of
me. I don't understand. Wow. It's not like he stood up and said, well, the gunfight's over. I'm going to go get him. Like, that would be getting shot like a punk. Or standing up and shouting, hey guys, he's out of bullets. That's getting shot like a punk. What are you talking about?
Okay, so let me explain, all right? So when he throws the gun down, it looks like that's an opportunity to either A, move for cover, or B, try and apprehend this dude, right? That's what he's coming around the car for. But he's already in a cover position, so why give that up?
Because it's not working. Because it's obviously not working. And he wants the action. What are you... Like, he took point. He took point on this entire raid. He continues to chase this person after getting shot. He just wants the juice of the action.
I don't understand, Bill.
I literally have no clue why you're fixated on this so much.
You are seeing what you want to see, Brian, and there's no way.
They clearly put that really scene are. Of him watching the roadside explosion to give context to everything that follows.
See, because you're reading that as he's just watching that. I think that's what happened to him. I think that's even better.
Video, that proves my point even more.
He's reliving it, Brian. He is troubled. You're saying that he's like searching for this stuff.
Yeah, because he's troubled.
He is messed up. I'm saying he is tormented by the fact that I think he let some people die in that situation. They literally rode over a roadside bomb.
The particulars of that situation literally only matter insofar as this is why he's doing this now. He is chasing the same Jones that he had in the military, and he found it, and he's going to respond to it.
You're gonna take it that way. I'm gonna take it a different way.
What other way is there to take it? You just said his only other option was that he gets shot like a punk.
Brian. That may have been better communicated if Casey Affleck wasn't acting like a mule kicked him in the head and he woke up not knowing how to act. Oh, like, my God. His performance in this movie is terrible.
So, like, okay.
I find him to be one of the most watchable, one of the most talented, one of the most charismatic actors today. He is garbage in this movie. And
I
is that
disagree,
delivery.
But I really don't have the strength to argue this point, these points anymore. But I've been sapped by someone wondering why someone's changing cover in a firefight.
Here's my thing, Brian. So you just asked me what other way could I read it? And that is filmmaking 101, isn't it? Is to give a little bit of ambiguity to the audience so they can make up their own mind.
Obviously,
and you're asking
not in this
me,
situation.
Why? Why is this situation any different from like good filmmaking where you don't expressly tell the audience exactly what to think? Because you're saying there's only one, you're saying there is only one way to watch him watching that video late at night.
No, I said that we have two different reads on what that video might be specifically,
you have
both
never,
of them should feed into
it.
The psychological construct of a man who would become part of one of the most dangerous parts of the most dangerous city's police force and then act recklessly during a firefight. Both of those things that we saw in that online video feed into that perfectly.
I think what we're really missing, though, in talking about this movie is Michael K. Williams.
Which, this is actually an adorable story.
Can we?
So Michael K. Williams shows up as like a break in the case. He is a transgender prostitute. Some point in the
I was wondering who y'all were talking about because I was like, I don't recognize that name. And then as soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, The Wire.
Yeah, Omar from The Wire. The best part is that in the middle of that scene, my fiance grabs my hand and puts it on her stomach, and I get to feel my daughter kick for the first time.
Oh, I was like, I didn't understand what was going on with that.
While Michael K. Williams is there dressed up as a woman and is talking about a junkie whore.
Brian.
What?
I didn't know you were pregnant.
I'm not pregnant. My fiance is.
Well, that I know, but that's what you're supposed to say.
Again, Amanda, you're not following me on Facebook enough.
I rarely go on Facebook anymore, to be fair.
Her name that,
well, congrats. I didn't know you were pregnant. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Well, apparently your future baby is a Michael K. Williams fan.
Yeah.
Which I will say, I love that Michael K. Williams is... Because he was in that sort of sequel thing to, like, this, what was it, like, The Spoils Before Dying?
Yeah.
Which I didn't think those were executed very well, but I love that he's doing more comedy and, like, more sort of, like, light, I wouldn't say lighthearted, but he's definitely, like, trying out new
things. He was in
Community,
too.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, he was a biology professor.
Which I will say, I'm going to use this transition into one of my other points about this movie. This movie is very... like ass happy, like there's
this is like a spiritual successor to the Fast and Furious movies with how ass happy it is.
It is like, and at first I was like, oh, like there's so many like upshots of like women's butts and oh, this is so grotesque. And then I realized
that's why they cast Gal Gadot.
Oh, that poor woman. Like, we know she has a butt. We know. Like, you don't have to keep showing it to us.
Dude, I will quote a Michael Mann movie as this movie quotes a Michael Mann movie. She's got a great ass.
Yep.
Well, even there's a line, and I actually wrote it down, where Irina is looking at pictures of her sister. Gal Gadot is her sister, and she's looking at pictures of her on her phone, and she goes, "She has a very nice ass, my sister." And I was like, "All right, guys." But it's not just women's asses, it's also men's asses. Like,
that's
what
the
kind
of equality that this movie espouses.
breaking that ceiling, man.
Damn right.
He's like, but like Woody Harrelson walks up and just takes a big old handful Michael K. Williams' butt. I enjoyed that thoroughly.
It made me wonder if their relationship was not purely professional.
That I would have liked to see a little bit more of. Because he's called Sweet Pea, isn't
yeah.
that his name?
Yeah.
And what was up with that dog with, like, that mohawk?
Oh, that pink dog. The mohawk, dude. Yeah. It was, like, dyed pink.
Oh, yeah. It was dyed pink. Like, hot pink.
That'll draw us back into the actual movie. I loved the use of color in this film.
There was a lot of... The color palette was quite striking.
like this weird fluorescent pink keeps showing up, and I was just like drawn in by it.
Well, because even when the cops, when they converge on after the big shootout, they're throwing yellow paint onto the police cars. Yeah. And I wondered what the significance of that was.
I found it hilarious that they're throwing, like, do they just have random paint? Like, what's going on with that? Like, they just have random paint buckets just waiting around for, like, cops to show up? And then there is a shot of a cop car literally going down, like getting out of that sequence with its smashed-in windshield with yellow paint all over it. And I'm like, could you not stop and squeegee it?
I don't know, man. Have you ever hit a really big bug and then you use your windshield wipers and it just makes it worse?
Oh yeah, that paint's not going anywhere.
I'm assuming like, they're just trying to get out of like the projects and then they'll get someone from lockup to tow it down.
They were not.
No, let's spend 40 minutes dissecting what could be happening with the paint on that car.
They were not driving very quickly though. They were like just crawling out of there.
I think that car got hit with paint like a punk.
he should have gone for cover.
Yeah.
Well, like even like
aid.
Actually, to your point about the paint, like you don't have like random things of paint like for touch-ups around your house?
Not bright yellow.
That was bright yellow.
It was bright yellow, but maybe they got like a kid's room. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but that was, I thought that was that is a good point, because I feel like this movie is very drab otherwise. It's that very like colorless.
But like even the fingerprint dust was like fluorescent pink. It was like weird.
That's his kind of motif is, and that's what I was laughing about. Like when we were talking about potentially talking about this film last week, was I can't wait to see all the sweaty people, because that's definitely
all the sweaty people.
That's like, and
where
like,
do they all come from?
Like it does kind of bug me sometimes when I see a film where people just like never sweat. Like even when they're like running full bore and then they stop and it's like, oh, so you could just like change and go to a club right now, dude? Like, cool, man. Like that doesn't happen to the rest of humanity.
It was like,
when I'm running after
degrees, it was 100 degrees
sweat.
And I walked from the metro station to my office once, and I got there and I was like sweating. I was like, man, this never happens to people in fucking movies.
Exactly.
Oh, and like Atlanta is disgusting.
I come from Houston. I spent 2 years in Houston, and I imagine that it's pretty much the same. Just like
I can see that.
400% humidity.
Very swamp.
It's so gross.
So one thing that I found hilarious was that the film, so when the 999 actually happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the wrong, spoiler alert, the wrong guy gets shot, right?
Marcus takes it.
Mm-hmm. Woody Harrelson,
which I thought that was really well done. I will admit that scene was tense, and I thought that
was
really
tense.
Well done.
It was good.
Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious how long it took Woody. Like, it takes him in the film itself like 5 or 10 minutes to drive head over heels, like full bore, to get to. And I'm like, could nobody get on the mic and like tell him, hey, Chris is okay? Like 5 minutes into that, like.
No, I don't think anybody was on the scene until like he's
when
on
he
the
arrives.
Scene.
There's a ton of people there.
Yeah, but I think at that point he already knew, because he didn't like fall to his knees and cry at relief. Like,
sure.
Right. Yeah.
But
I think he still I did feel
like it was very weird the way, like, I thought that was going to last like 2 or 3 minutes. Like, oh, he's going to go from one end of town to the other and you're going to follow. And like that sequence lasted a very long time. And I was like, how far is he driving?
Well, Woody Harrelson was driving like a punk. So
That's the third time you brought that up.
Yes.
It's getting tired, Brian.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just lazy
it up,
at this point.
Switch it up.
I keep bringing it up like a punk.
So the other thing that I thought was... the thing that lost me the most was Casey Affleck gets a text message phone call in the elevator telling him
in the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. in the elevator, like, hey, the guy right behind you is the bad dude.
No, he calls him. He calls him.
He gets a I said he gets a phone call.
Oh, I thought you said he gets a text message.
I said that at first. And
oh, okay, sorry.
And also, the phone call, we should be clear, does not legitimately say, quote, the guy behind you is the bad guy, end quote.
I wish it did.
It says, it's his uncle saying, don't do anything, don't go anywhere, Rodriguez is our guy. And Rodriguez just so happened to have just come and, like, say, hey, I need to ask you some questions.
Yes. And so instead of like getting, he has a moment where Clifton Collins literally turns his back on him and walks away. That is a moment where you literally draw your pistol.
What are you fucking crazy?
What are you talking about?
They have no evidence to support this. You want Casey Affleck to draw down and butcher a homicide detective in cold blood at a hospital?
Hey, Brian, you should listen to what I actually say instead of jumping ahead and assuming what I said. Because I did not say that. I said he needs to draw his gun, tell him, hey, you're under arrest for suspicion, put him in handcuffs, basically drag him, you know, maybe call your uncle again and then be like, yo, bro, what was that? Like, I lost you, I think. And then all Woody Harrelson's got to do is get out of the back of the fucking car and be like, yeah, he's the bad guy. He's the bad guy.
But why not? And why not do that while driving to the precinct? Be like, hey, we're going to the precinct. Have a couple of black and whites there to back us up. I'm literally going to walk him right in.
Yeah, that sequence.
Why bring? In fact, that's crazy because I thought that was one of the best sequences of the films.
I just didn't think it set up. I don't think it set up nicely enough. I mean, I thought the ending, I think the ending would have had so much more punch if it was very awkward. Like the way they went up, I don't know. I just thought it was really awkward.
Yeah, that whole sequence lost me completely. I was like, he's the bad guy. He's the bad guy. And you're just going to let him walk away. Cool.
What do you mean you're just going to let him walk away?
Well, no, I understood why he was doing that. But there's no, because they're driving in, are they driving in separate cars?
Yes.
This is so confusing.
Okay, so
in the same car?
Here's what happened. They get out of that elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Something is clearly about to happen.
Yes.
But then you see that another car has approached them.
What?
And yes, there was a car behind them.
I don't remember that.
Okay, I don't remember
that. I'll take your word for it, but I don't
remember. They're standing there like High Noon style. I legitimately thought, and I would have loved this movie even more, if we'd gotten an old-fashioned cowboy quick draw thing.
I thought that was going to happen too.
Oh, that would have been sweet. But anyway, so like that car drives by and breaks the tension. Because you can't then shoot that guy and then try to make it look like someone else did it.
Why not? Just let the car drive by.
They're literally on the top of a hospital parking structure.
Yeah.
That car is going there to park.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well,
if you were on a street, maybe he could be like, hey, can you hold on a second?
Yeah,
hold
but
on,
those wait. Those
oh, okay, now,
those
bam.
Hospital parking lots also have cameras.
Oh my god, like, are we gonna be talking about hospital parking lots now?
Anyway, so or it would have been something like, I'll drive you or something. But at that point, like, everything's kind of broken. And so he says, okay, you take your car, I'll take mine.
Sure.
And honestly, there was a part of me that thought Casey Affleck's car was going to explode. I don't
right.
know.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah, someone was whispering that behind me. And I was like, nah, that's not how this movie ends.
No,
I know how
then,
this movie ends.
But then Woody Harrelson is in Clifton Collins Jr.'s car. And he shoots him. And he gets shot.
Well,
you missed
the best part of that. He gets in the car. He sees Woody Harrelson has the entire, for the entire movie, been wearing this very tacky American flag tie.
Yep.
Very loud, very tacky. You see it from a mile away. It is hanging from his rearview mirror, and he looks at it, and then as he's looking at it, he sees Woody Harrelson sitting in the backseat. I thought that was a really great way to end a kind of terrible movie. It was a great ending, but yeah. And then he shoots him, which, I thought it was pretty great.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot.
I just wish what had come before it was better.
I'll go with that.
I like, there's this kind of, there's a stealth narrative here regarding Woody Harrelson's character that I really liked, which is that at every opportunity he brings up Casey Affleck's mom, who I presume is his sister.
Yeah.
And he talks a lot about, you know, you out-monster the monster, as we heard in the trailer, and getting home safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you finally see his apartment, it is not going well. He is obviously on drugs. And I think it's become clear to him that he has out-monstered the monster to the point where he's become a monster. And so him finding this way to grant himself an ending that is, shall we say, as close to justice as they might get.
Right.
I thought was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they both shoot.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Harrelson does get hit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he shoots Collins in the head and Harrelson gets shot in the stomach. And you see him and he's kind of like, okay. But he has this look of like serenity on his face.
Sure.
He saved his nephew. He's taken out
he's
the bad
also
guy.
In a hospital parking lot. Like I'm like, get up, go, like, walk.
He doesn't
to the
want to live.
I know. which is exactly why he lights up a joint at that moment.
That was pretty awesome too. That was his suicide by dirty cop. And there's another thing that you can talk about. If you really wanted to take the time to think about these characters, which obviously some people here don't.
Nope.
You find out that the reason that Aaron Paul was kicked off the police force was because of a bad suicide by cop.
He was the cop. They say that, but I don't know what that means.
It's when, let's say that you were depressed, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make this a little more real. I am depressed.
Okay, you don't have to explain it to that point. Like, what does suicide by cop actually...
I'm about to say it. Let's say you want to die, but you don't want to kill yourself. So, you take an unloaded gun, you find a police officer,
you act
erratically and have the cop shoot you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, when they said that, I thought they meant a cop killed himself.
No.
See, yeah, because I know, well, they have, like, suicide watches, I think, for cops.
Oh, yeah,
where other cops will go, and I thought maybe that's what they meant.
No.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, like, all they had to do, well, you know, maybe I should know what suicide by cop, like that lingo, like, specifically means, like, right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And you repeating that, like, as soon as you said it was suicide by cop, I was like, oh, okay, I understand what they're saying. But they said it really quickly to the point where I was like, I didn't understand what they just said. Did they said something suicide and then cop. And I was like, did a cop commit suicide? Did what?
No,
and I
was the cop just like, was ah. The instrument of a suicidal person's intention.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yep. And so that was him? But...
And so that was him?
So Aaron Paul's character was the mark for someone who wanted to die. And so he killed someone.
What?
It was a suicide by cop. And Aaron Paul was the cop.
But he didn't know.
No, he thought he was in danger. But instead, he accidentally killed someone.
Yeah.
Who was no danger, but was, you know, just depressed or insane.
Yeah.
And so that's where a lot of his guilt comes from. And they're talking about him being clean. But then after his brother is really horrifically murdered.
Why do they do that? Why do they take out like one of the members of the guy that of the group that they need to pull off this very, very, very important heist that they've already established that is very, very, very difficult?
Oh, there's a lot of reasons. Because the people are obviously pissed off because they're not going to get the money. So they're like, fuck this. We're not going to do it.
Yeah, but so, they don't express that until that sequence when he shows up dead.
Well, because Michael's already said that. And he's like, these fucking guys aren't going to be cool with this.
Well, which is why I wanted to bring up the fact that like Norman Reed is dying so early in the movie. And I could feel the Walking Dead fans being so disappointed in my theater, just crestfallen.
Yes, indeed.
Is that really? Yeah, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense that he would, and unless it's just for
it's
push for Aaron Paul's character.
Yeah, pushes,
and that's
that
pretty much
way
it.
Over the edge.
Like, yeah, he's just like, fodder for that. Yeah,
yeah.
His motivations.
I'm like, I don't understand like why they would.
But
like,
yeah, it's
they can
yeah.
they can make a point like by taking the child away. Like they do later on in the film, that isn't as drastic of a measure as killing a lead person in this gang that is important to the heist that's about to go down in like a couple of days.
Right.
And I'm like, that's bad timing, dudes. Like, really bad timing.
But it's pretty clear that they're going to kill them all anyway.
Is it?
Like, otherwise, why are they doing this, Brian? Like,
because they're fucking crazy Russian mobsters and they're tying
no, no,
up
no,
their
no,
loose
no,
ends.
No, you can't say that.
Like the gang guys or the heist guys can't be living their lives thinking, I'm going to get offed anyway, so why do this heist? They have to think, I'm going to get away with this. That's why I'm doing this heist. Otherwise, they're going to kill me. And I understand that, and that those stakes are established by the fact that they literally do a heist to open the film.
Right.
Like, they're doing a heist because they understand
this
Russian mob isn't to be messed with, so I'm not going to mess with them, right? So
but
they tell
they
my
were
guy.
Doing, they were do- doing the first heist for money, which they were then denied. And the Russians know that by denying these people their money, that's like a 50% incentive for them to do it again. But
sure.
You never know. They may say, fuck it, I'm just not going to do it. So let's squash any conversation they could have about that by murdering one of their crew.
Why don't they murder Aaron Paul's character?
Because
the fuck
they
up.
Probably don't. The Russians probably don't give a shit what the power structure is. They only ever speak to Michael, so they're not going to murder Michael. So they're just like, all right, we'll pick up the other contractor guy we know, and then he'll be dead.
Why don't they just like hurt him really bad?
Because that
or
ain't their
chop
style.
Off
technically,
finger.
Technically,
chop, like chop
let
off
me say,
finger?
Technically, they did hurt him real bad.
Yeah, that is
true.
Fatally bad.
Really, yeah. Fatally bad. You know, Bill, I don't know. We could have an entire podcast where all we do is question character motivations. And
I'm
like
just
say,
saying there's
why,
a writer on
why
staff.
In Rapunzel does she even have a window? Like what?
She gotta breathe, man.
You know,
why wouldn't
the parents in Frozen send their daughter off to the X-Men school or chop off her hands? Because they really didn't seem
oh, no,
to
no.
know what the fuck they were doing.
They're
the
definitely
times.
Gonna send her. They're gonna send her to X-Men school. Charles Xavier is getting a hand.
Oh no,
Elsa for sure,
guys.
That's happening.
I just want to talk about.
Because
the
Disney
infrastructure
now owns
of a
Marvel.
Hospital parking lot.
So if you look at hospital parking lots along the Eastern Seaboard, you'll clearly see.
I Google mapped this.
Based on my expertise in urban planning.
That's what
oh
I'm
my
saying.
God, we've been talking about this movie for way too long.
Yeah, I was about to say, we're getting to weird minutiae here. I will say that I found this movie to be an excellent, tense yes, quote-unquote cliche gritty, but it had the moral metal to back up its aesthetics, unlike most films that just try to use a shaky cam to make otherwise paragon of virtue Jason Bourne seem like a bad guy. This movie
right.
had the edging on nihilistic moral gray area to back up the grit and the grain of its aesthetic. I thought that the actors were great. I thought that the murky morality was fantastic. I thought that the score was fantastic. And
was that Atticus Ross?
It was it?
Who yeah, worked it with Hillcoat before when he made that Nick Cave movie?
Well, it was actually going to be Nick Cave at first, and Nick
yeah.
Cave got booted off this film. I don't
Wait,
know what
Nick
happened.
The Proposition? I think Nick Cave wrote it.
But Nick Cave, didn't he do the... I thought he did the music for that, too.
Oh, well, I think he's credited, but I don't know how much of it he actually did. But yeah, Atticus Ross. So this is the second time they've worked together.
Interesting.
I think it's Atticus. I believe so.
Real quick. Yeah.
Cate Blanchett and Christoph Waltz were going to be in this film, along with Charlie
what?
Hunnam.
Christoph Waltz have been.
I think Christoph Waltz.
Would he have been
Woody Harrelson? Yep. It said it
Woody
says
Harrelson's
Kate Hanslet.
Character?
So and then Charlie Hunnam would have been Casey Affleck's character.
So would Shia LaBeouf have been Gabe?
Shia was initially attached to star, but then later was replaced by Hunnam, who was replaced by Affleck. So they would all
I feel like
gone.
This yeah. movie made a. I had no idea that there was this much casting Terminal? News about this.
Yeah, I just saw the thing about Michael B. Jordan. That was it.
I think this movie traded up in almost every regard. I love Michael B. Jordan, but I don't think he could have pulled off the Mackey part.
Well, I would have loved to see Christoph Waltz in that character.
Oh no, that would have been too weird.
I don't want to see Christoph in anything that's not directed
by QT. Because I want to see what kind of train wreck that would have been.
That would have been a very interesting movie for reasons far surpassing.
I think that would have taken this into like Bad Lieutenant territory, like just very strange, warped. I thought this movie had very troubling racial and sexual. I mean, I don't even want to
get into the racial politics.
I don't even want to get into how the women are treated in this movie because there's no point.
What's wrong with Kate Winslet? I mean,
by the characters? She needs to get, well, number one, they need to fire her dialect coach. That person should never work again.
Really?
No, her accent is terrible.
Did you say Georgian?
What's that?
What accent?
No, her Russian accent.
Well,
her
it's Russian by
coach.
Way of Israel, by way of living in America for a while.
Oh, no.
No, I think that she did a good thing by not laying too much on the Russian.
No. It was so bad. No, there's just so many troublesome aspects of this movie. I just can't even. It doesn't matter. We've already touched on it. But yeah. I said my piece. I did not enjoy this movie.
Okay.
And Bill?
So.
Mm-hmm. How many movies perfected the parking lot? Parking lot scenes?
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Bill's new podcast examining movies where people don't get shot like punks and parking structures are given a firm amount of surveillance.
I'm just saying.
Bill, you're like the people who really fixated on that cereal thing where it's like, is there a payphone at the Best Buy?
That was like a serious issue. Like, come on.
Is there a surveillance camera in this parking lot?
That was a throwaway line. Okay.
I know. We're just busting your balls.
I know.
But y'all busted my balls three times. So I'm seeing a trend and I want it changed.
Well, look, I want y'all to start
stabbing me in the heart a little bit or something else. Change it up, guys.
Anyway.
We need to end.
I was going to say, I don't know about the racial politics because every single race is bad in this movie.
Oh god, this is getting into like Hateful Eight territory. I'm having PTSD Hateful Eight. I just can't. Okay. I don't want to.
And what I was gonna say that was spoilery was that Anthony Mackie is the only person in this movie who has like a complex emotional evolution.
But I wish we would have we need to stop. We've been talking about this movie for way too long.
It's true. This is we've almost been talking for three quarters of an hour.
You might need to cut this down, Ryan.
I'm not going to listen to this and cut parts out. What can we possibly lose?
Fine.
All right.
You can cut out the Norman Reedus quote unquote spoil.
I have that marked to bleep.
Oh. Bleep.
I'm just going to bleep you saying the name. Anyway.
Whatever.
Okay, so that's it. 999. Hey, at the very least, if you and your friends have different tastes in movies, then you'll have an interesting conversation afterwards. This somehow lasted longer than The Witch.
I wish we had talked about The Witch again, honestly.
Well, we all agreed on it too much.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot of argument.
Well, ladies and gentlemen at home, hopefully this has been at least fun or entertaining for you to listen to. I literally have no idea what we're talking about next week.
What's coming out?
Oh, man.
I don't even know what's coming out next week.
The Oscars?
What?
I said Oscars.
Oh, the Oscar. No, we're not.
No, we're not talking about the Oscars.
Could we talk about Zootopia? Because apparently, like legitimately, I am hearing ridiculously good things about Zootopia.
I'd be down to talk about
also,
Zootopia.
That
film apparently has some interesting race things going on.
What?
So, yeah.
Yeah, there's some like, yeah. Well, it's also, I feel like it's a little more mature humor than they're letting on. Yeah, which I'm into.
Way over the top. Way over the top of most kids' heads. It's sitting at 100% right now. We can actually affect that now.
We can.
On Rotten Tomatoes.
Usually I'm the go-to kids movie guy, but someone swooped in ahead of me on it. Anyway.
Yeah, I had an opportunity and I was like, nah.
Unimportant. Knight of Cups will be coming out soon. On the 11th of March, 10 Cloverfield Lane will be coming out. I'm interested to see what that is all about.
The sneaky movie.
Sneaky movie. Sneaky movie 2016.
That's that rare weekend where four movies are opening wide, too. And I have heard of two of them.
Well, luckily, yeah. So next weekend, we'll talk about Zootopia, probably. The weekend that follows 10 Cloverfield Lane. And then I would say that the weekend after that, it doesn't look like much of anything worthwhile is coming out. So we'll probably talk about Knight of Cups then.
Okay.
Okay.
And then we'll go on. Also, ladies and gentlemen at home, don't hold me to any of this. It's very much subject to change. So,
it's up to Jordan, really, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Our benevolent Lord and Master, Jordan Rupp. So that is all for today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Amanda Waltz, why don't you tell us where you can be found online between now and next time?
You can find me on Twitter at MediaWaltz. You can also find me MediaWaltz on Letterboxd, and you can check out my blog, Steel Cinema, on WordPress.
And Bill Graham.
You can find me in a theater combing through this film like this is a Pruder film.
Now, Brian, if you look, after the guy throws his gun out, Casey Affleck clearly stands up so that his head is well above shoulder height.
I just love it's like JFK, like you're just standing in front of projector with a pointer back to the left,
like a 40 minute long video essay getting shot like a bitch with Casey Affleck.
Anyways, you can find me on the film stage and you can find me on freshfiction.tv and then on Twitter at cablebfg, and that's about it.
Okay. Huh? You can find me on my personal site, dearfilm.net, Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, and of course at thefilmstage.com. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Tune in next week.